Okay, good afternoon. This is good afternoon from Geneva, because I'm at the moment in WHO in Geneva. It's afternoon over there, but it may be morning or evening in some part of the world. So welcome to the WHO teleconference on the control of multi-drug-resistant organism in nursing home setting. I'm Nizam Damani, and I'll be chairing this session today. Today's teleclass will be delivered by Professor Andreas Voss, whom we all know is very well known in the field of infection prevention and control. Dr. Andreas Voss is a professor of medical microbiology and infection prevention control at the Radboud University Nijmegen Medical Center in the Netherlands. He has served on the executive board of the various international organizations, including the International Society of Chemotherapy. ESCMID, Infection Control African Network, or ICANN, and also he has served on WHO Steering Group on HCAI. He has published more than 250 papers in peer-reviewed journals, and he is current editor-in-chief of the Antimicrobial Resistance and Infection Prevention Journal. He is also head of the Regional Infection Control Group called iPrevent. So it is with great pleasure that I introduce to you Professor Andreas Voss, who will deliver a lecture, which is the last lecture in the telecast presentation for 2013, on the control of multi-drug-resistant organism in the nursing home. On to you, Andreas. Thank you.
Thank you, Nizam, and welcome to everyone listening in. If this sounds funny or feels funny to you, I can tell you I totally share this feeling, because giving a talk into your telephone always, for all those who have not done it, I can tell you it's a strange feeling. Having said that, I'll try to keep it as normal as possible, and I'm glad to share with you what we actually did in the Netherlands, that I'm choose the topic of control of multi-drug-resistant organisms in nursing homes has all to do with the fact that we were trying to get a new guideline in the Netherlands, and since I'm interested in the topic and had some experience, I was asked to share this new guideline that are actually just defended yesterday in front of multiple people, and that will be published very, very soon in the beginning of 2014 in the Netherlands, and as we publish papers or guidelines, it will come out as an English version too, and we talk about that later. Let's start out with for you the first slide about current problems in nursing homes, and that is at least in my country, but I assume it won't be much different in many others, that the infection control structure is not always present in nursing homes, and when we talk about nursing homes, anyway, that's a huge variety and an extreme kind of setting, which have from some settings with ventilator units and patients who need ventilation to more or less kind of living rooms. So a very, very different structure from what we know to from hospitals and extremely diverse. And in many of these, is not an infection control professional present. So at least we have some infection control nurses working in nursing homes, but it's a very, very few, and certainly far less than we would like to have. And I assume that it's not very different in your situation. Furthermore, there is no or very little cooperation with hospitals and other institutions with regard to infection control, at least in most areas. It's very different in mine, and in the introduction, Nizam already said that I'm being part of a group called iPrevent, who's trying to do infection control in a total for all the hospitals, nursing home, and GPs in one region. And last but not least, if you talk to people working in nursing homes, and the Dutch are very lucky to have an own medical specialty taking care of nursing home patients, a so-called professional for elderly patients, which is different from the geriatrics people. But anyway, if you talk to the doctors and nurses working in nursing homes, they like to talk about their clients and not their patients, and they have a whole different idea, including that they would like to give their clients a kind of a home environment, which a lot of times is not very easy for all those who would like to apply infection control and hospital kind of guidelines. So the most important thing on the next slide, and I hope that Paul deleted the Dutch text behind it, but anyway, on the slide where the funny elderly people are on, is that nursing homes are not the same as hospitals. We have an extremely aging population where in 2050, 50% of us will be very, very old, and thereby I mean 50% of the population, not all of us on the phone. We will be old too. I certainly will be part of the elderly population at that time. But just to say that there will be an increasing number of elderly people who need care, and they're very, very different to what the elderly people in the past looked like and what they look for and what they wish for and what kind of care they need. So it's a complete different setting than hospitals, which is why the Dutch Working Party on Infection Prevention decided they need to have their own guidelines. But just let's see how I see what's happening right now. And if you go to your number slide 3, I believe, with Meet Mrs. A during the time of ignorance, I call it. It's an elderly lady celebrating her 100th birthday, ignoring anything there is. She's lived in and had multiple urinary tract infections that all have been treated most of the time without taking cultures in the nursing home setting, and by now she's selected an ESBL E. coli. In addition, since she has this ESBL coli and urinary tract infection, she needs to be admitted to a hospital for intravenous treatment, which is not done in Dutch nursing homes, amazingly enough. And obviously, since there's no real communication between nursing home and hospital, there is no isolation of this ESBL-positive patient, and obviously you get what you can expect. You get transmission to other patients within your healthcare setting. Due to the broad-spectrum antimicrobial treatment she needs, she is developing Clostridium difficile-associated diarrhea, and again, at the end of the treatment, once she got rid of her UTI, but not of her Clostridium difficile-associated diarrhea, she is transferred back to the nursing home again without saying a word, obviously. If you look into the next slide and meet Miss B during the time of blaming, I call this one, you can clearly see this elderly lady already looks more dangerous than Mrs. A, but actually it's the same case and the same problem. Also, she has an ESBL carriership. Now, after we invested a lot of time into making sure that hospitals and nursing homes talk to each other, the nursing home does more diagnostic. They know that this patient has an ESBL, and the hospital really doesn't feel like taking the patient over. They will in the end, but of course they kind of say, yeah, it's too much effort to take this patient in isolation. We need to do, but in the end they will take them. They will get in isolation. There will be no transmission, which is a big plus, but she will still develop Clostridium difficile-associated diarrhea thanks to her broad-spectrum treatment. But this time, obviously, the hospital will talk to the nursing home, and now the nursing home is complaining about that they can't take back someone with Clostridium difficile. And I hope that many of you kind of recognize those different stages. At least we have been in my area. First, we weren't talking to each other and weren't doing diagnostics. Now we talk to each other and do diagnostics, and now we blame each other for sending us the trouble patients. And so some of those problems appear kind of like a one-way street. And if you look at it, obviously everything we do in a hospital with regard to surgery and surgical site infections is a problem we place from the hospital to the nursing home on the other way around. If you look into multi-drug-resistant organisms and especially uropathogens from the urine, this is, at least in my country, something coming from the nursing home to the hospital. But the most important thing I want to say, in general, everything, and most certainly also multi-drug-resistant organisms, they go both ways. So we exchange a lot of patients with a lot of resistance and the genes coming to it. But what we do about multi-drug-resistant and the control of it, obviously all has to do with the final goal of infection control, and that is preventing healthcare-associated infections. And the question would be, how many healthcare-associated infections can we actually in a nursing home expect? And I wish I would have a great slide like this, slide number 7, I believe, on healthcare-associated infections, where we, from the hospital setting, because we do know what is about what we are contracting. It's the old so-called 5% probably getting a healthcare-associated infection, that we know a lot about how many more days, namely in the U.S., 17.6 extra days. We know it's 1.7 million people on a year base and nearly 100,000 people who die with or from healthcare-associated infections, which is an enormous number, more than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. So it's an enormous problem. And the fun part is that while we have all these exact numbers from hospitals, we have very little to no numbers in our nursing home settings. And this is why I once again would like to say, like I said in the earlier slide, that nursing homes and hospitals are not the same. Until the recent part, we didn't even have healthcare-associated infection surveillance in nursing homes. And not only that we weren't doing it, because healthcare professionals were not known and used to do surveillance and to the problems in nursing homes, they also had no time or money, or at least nothing earmarked for infection control. And we didn't even have good definitions. If you look into the definitions of healthcare-associated infections, obviously there are a few Canadian definitions that are used in the, by others. There is a European group called HALT, who looked into it. And in any cases, the Dutch didn't like any of the definitions, so we made our own, which are basically actually primed and onto nursing homes and done by this nursing home physician. So anyway, nursing homes, we don't know a lot about healthcare-associated infections, at least in the past. There is, as you may see on slide 10, there was a nice Norwegian study clearly shown that that healthcare-associated infections in the nursing home population leads to about 2 times higher risk of morbidity, a 9 times higher risk of being admitted to a hospital, and a 6 times higher risk of mortality. So amazing impact, which is why I think it's amazing that we don't have more numbers from many, many countries. Until recently, we didn't have a lot of Dutch studies. We had one that showed that elderly with dementia, again, and cared for in a nursing home, had a higher risk of UTI, respiratory tract infection, and conjunctivitis, but we had no numbers. And actually, it was iPreventa, or regional group, who did start surveillance later on. But if you look into the literature, then there is a variety of between 5% and 25%. There were no standard, as I already said, no standard definitions, so I don't know if there's international comparison even possible. And so until recently, even for countries like the Netherlands, who are supposedly having an advanced infection control system, what we did was more or less assumptions, and as you can see from the little cartoon on the right of this picture, assumptions can be a very dangerous, if not disappointing, way. So that is nothing we should do. In the next slide, slide number 12, unfortunately, you don't have the numbers I wanted to present. It was too late in sending it to Paul. But what it would have shown is the prevalence of healthcare-associated infections in the nursing homes in the Nijmegen region. We do a yearly prevalence study in nursing homes since 2007, and we started with like 16 nursing homes or 17. We at the present are close to 40 nursing homes that in the area that participate. And what you could see, and that's very typical for healthcare-associated infection surveillance, is that over the first years, it was like between 7 and 8% for the first 4 years in a row with no change whatsoever. And then after investing 4 years into prevalence and feedback and actions in the nursing homes, finally it kicked in, and in 2011 we were at 4%, and in 2012 at 2%, which was a little bit too low, I could say. In 2013 we will be around 3% again. But what you see is that after investing years, you drop in your infection rates and finally see the effect. So what should we do to come back to the primary topic of the talk, multi-drug-resistant organisms? What do we do in nursing homes? And I believe that a lot of what I will say will raise more questions than answers, and then you will stay with a lot of who, what, and why, and not all of that will be answered. But I will try to give you an explanation of the new Dutch guideline on multi-drug-resistant control in nursing homes, which is actually for gram-negative rots and non-fermentified Acinetobacter pseudomonas and Stenotrophomonas. It also includes penicillin-resistant pneumococci and vancomycin-resistant enterococci. But for MRSA, we have another guideline. So, and it's also not dealing with outbreaks. So what I talk about will be about the previously mentioned multi-drug-resistant organisms, excluding MRSA and excluding outbreaks. Until the present time, we only have, and I show you an example of the Dutch guideline as it actually looks, the Dutch guideline on multi-drug-resistant organisms, in Dutch called BRMO, which you can actually find on the website of the Working Party for Infection Prevention in an English version. Unfortunately, it's an older version of the guideline. So there was nothing for nursing homes, and my task was to change that. And in order to really control multi-drug-resistant organisms, I believe that you need more than just an infection control guideline. You do need clear definitions of what an MDRO is. You need the reliable diagnostics. And if you look on the website I've given of the Dutch Society for Medical Microbiology called NVMM, if you look there, you find an English detection guideline of how to detect multi-drug-resistant organisms, so that we make sure that all laboratories use the same reliable diagnostic to find their MDROs. You need an infection control guideline, which the one for the nursing home will be in the near future on the website given for the Working Party of Infection Prevention, WIP. And as I mentioned, have a look on that website. You find a lot of English translations of our guidelines. And you need a good treatment guideline, and in that case we have another one, which is the SWAP, which is a Dutch for a foundation of antimicrobial stewardships. So I believe that all of these should work together, and we should have good guidelines, good national guidelines, to really control multi-drug-resistant organisms for diagnostic, prevention, and treatment. I said you have to start out with first defining what is an MDRO. I believe it's very important that everyone is using the same guidelines. Obviously, if you just look at it, we usually talk about multi-drug resistance when pathogens evade the most commonly used antibiotics, either because phenotypically or because they have the right genes or enzymes. And you could say, so do we need different definitions for MDROs in hospitals and in nursing homes, since obviously the antibiotics I use, at least in my country, nursing homes exclusively use peroral treatment, whereas hospitals obviously use any kind of administration and a lot of IV and then switch to peroral or intramuscular even. So in the discussion among the Dutch expert, we decided we would like to keep the same definitions, so we make sure that independent on which healthcare setting you are, we all talk about the same kind of patient with multi-drug-resistant organisms. And you might have a definition for that, but if not, you can have a look at the Dutch one, which is depicted in slide 18. There are the definitions for multi-drug-resistant organisms, and it's in principle it's pretty easy, but you do need some explanation. If you have a gram-negative staph is actually the Dutch for gram-negative rot, like an Enterobacteria C, and it is, we have two things. If they either carry ESBL or a carbapenemase, so either or, they get an A, meaning you are immediately an MDRO. B, the letter B in the table, stands for you have to have two antimicrobial groups you are resistant for in order to be seen as a multi-drug resistant organism. In a case of an E. coli, the example would be if the E. coli is resistant, for example, to ciprofloxacin, a fluoroquinolone, and to gentamicin, an aminoglycoside. In that case, you would be considered a multi-drug resistant organism in my country. If you look to this table 2, to the criteria for non-fermenters, Acinetobacter, Stenotrophomonas, and Pseudomonas, you can see whenever an Acinetobacter has a carbapenemase, it's obviously a multi-drug resistant or the combination of aminoglycoside and fluoroquinolone resistance. For Stenotrophomonas, we always said if you cut from moxazole resistance, you should be in there, and actually that one is going out of the guideline, I can say, in the next revision they will not have. For Pseudomonas, you have to have resistance against three antimicrobial classes. That's what the letter C is for, resistance for three antimicrobials. So any three out of those listed, and you would be a multi-drug resistant organism. And I think it's easy for penicillin-resistant pneumococci and vancomycin-resistant vancomycin-resistant enterococci. So we only look at Enterococcus faecium, which usually is 100% penicillin-resistant, and then vancomycin-resistant. For streptococci, for pneumococci, we only look at the penicillin resistance. But if it would be vancomycin resistant, which we haven't seen yet, it would be in there too. So these are the definitions, and it's good to have some national definitions so we all talk about the same. This is just a picture and the website for the guideline for detection of multi-drug resistant microorganisms. So you can actually take this slide and have a look at the PDF in English. Indications for screening. I think that's the next thing you need to know, when to look for a multi-drug resistant colonization or infections. And we do so for all patients or all clients on admission to a nursing home who had been cared for in a foreign hospital or nursing home within the last 2 months or for longer than 24 hours. Obviously, that's not something easily transferable to high prevalence countries with high prevalence of MDROs. For you, it would be more the other point if the client had been admitted in a unit in another healthcare setting with an ongoing MDR outbreak, then on admission, these people would be put in isolation and screened. And furthermore, we do have a contact screening after contact with an unexpected carrier of an MDRO. If you look into the screening sites and which sites should you actually have to look for it, and I think we can be short of that, we do have routine site and extra sites. The extra sites like a wound, sputum, urine, obviously are always only possible when there is a wound or when there is a urinary catheter. In general, for most enterobacteria, say, and enterococci, etc., you need a fecal feces sample or a rectal sample, and for all the others, we look into sputum. So it's mainly a rectal swab and feces or a sputum we use to look for our multi-drug resistant organisms. When you look at the number of cultures we ask for, it's a single set. So unlike MRSA, where many countries use multiple sets for gram-negative rods, multi-drug-resistant gram-negative rods, and non-fermenters, we think a single set is enough, and we don't have sufficient scientific data to show that duplicated or repeated cultures are actually needed. The detection usually is very, very good. So we don't do that. Then let's go to the main part of the new guideline, and probably for you for this talk, I don't know, it's the isolation methods. And we believed, or at least the expert group, which consisted of this specialists in elderly people care, infection control professionals, clinical microbiologists, and people from public health, so this expert group decided that the knowledge on isolation methods in nursing homes is too little. They don't know what contact isolation or droplet isolation is, which seems to be something we know very, very well in hospitals, is not so well known in this sector. So instead of working with things like universal precautions and specific isolation types, we decided we wanted to describe exactly what they need to do in a table. So in opposite to all other Dutch guidelines for hospitals, where a type of isolation is mentioned, in the new guideline will be not an isolation type, but instead, and it starts on slide number 24, I hope it's 24, but on isolation measures, number one, where you can see that for the next three slides, we describe the exact isolation measures. So on the left, it's always the same. It's the Enterobacteriaceae for ESBL mainly, or other combined resistance, followed by the carbapenem-producing Enterobacteriaceae, Acinetobacter, Pseudomonas, Deinonychus, Streptococci, and Enterococci. And then we just say what is needed. And this is a pity that there is no discussion really possible at this time, but obviously hand hygiene you need for everyone. In contact with gloves, yes. But in the guideline, in the real guideline, it will tell you only, at least for everything except carbapenem-producing Enterobacteriaceae and Acinetobacter, the gloves are only used in the moment you actually have contact with the patient or direct environment. It's not for social contact. It's not for just coming in and dropping something. It's only at that time. And the exception from that are CPE and Acinetobacter, which we in our Dutch setting would see it, in hospital setting, would see as something to isolate in strict isolation. Here you use the gloves whenever you come get into the room. The same thing is with gowns. We had a lot of discussion on what kind of gowns do we use. We actually said that in most cases we'll just use plastic aprons that protect the front of your clothing, and only for CPE and Acinetobacter we will be using disposable long-sleeved gowns. In this table you still see a yes for a mask for CPE and Acinetobacter. I have to say that the higher part of the Dutch working party of infection prevention, the ones in charge, I would say, yesterday decided that probably the mask in the nursing homes should not be used with the exception of Streptococcus pneumonia. So the two yeses for CPE and Acinetobacter will change in the final guideline to a no to. So we will not use masks, and there's no good to prove that there is transmission on that route. Obviously, whenever you do, we do have still a rule. If you expect aerosols or actually spatters, then people should wear a mask in general. If you look into the type of rooms, you might see that we use the single room exclusively for CP and Acinetobacter, and also for Streptococcus pneumoniae. And there you don't see the there are little like things which you added to a single room for penicillin-resistant pneumococci is actually only for the first 48 hours of treatment, effective treatment. After that, there's no isolation anymore needed. But you see that we do care for people with ESBL and others in multi-bed in the nursing home, because they are just not enough single bed. We all would have loved to say single bed at all times for all MDROs, but this is something that is not possible, at least in the Dutch nursing home setting. What we did instead was to specify the what kind of wet rooms do they have. They need to have their own toilet or a bedpan or commode or however you want to describe that. But so you can see that for all the people with the MDROs, with the exception of the pneumococci, we say that even if they don't have a single room, they still need their own toilet or a bedpan or a commode. And the same thing is more or less with the bathrooms too. So for some of them are allowed to share, like for ESBL. And one reason to be less stringent here is that by now we know that up to 10% of the open population in the Netherlands is ESBL carrier, so I think it's already endemic. We can do a little bit less there. And then the last column would be the use of shared rooms and contact with groups. As you know, in nursing homes, a lot of the clients do not stay in their bed in the room for most of the day, but they need to meet with others for social reasons and for therapeutic reasons. And so obviously we said this, we cannot withhold that from nursing home patients. Even if you would like to do that in a hospital setting, we can't do so in a nursing home setting. And last but not least, with the exception maybe of CPE and Acinetobacter, they're a team of people from infection control and from the medics in the nursing home have to decide individually per patient what they could do. The last table with the isolation measures is on medical devices that obviously would need to be used per patient, so you don't want to slap it from one patient to the other, and thereby with poor cleaning have the chance of transmission. If you look into cleaning and disinfection, that should be done daily. Sorry for the mistake in the table. I maybe hope Paul saw that, but typically read daily. And if you look into the disinfection, yes, we say all non-client-specific materials. So at the moment you share something between clients, obviously it need to be disinfected. And when you look into the what we call a final disinfection, in the moment a client leaves, that everything is being cleaned and disinfected, then yes, we advise that even for nursing homes, for all those being in isolation, harboring multi-drug-resistant organisms. Some extra explanation, I would say, and that is that as I already mentioned, that gloves we believe should only be worn during care, direct care on the patient, or contact with the close environment, as the WHO would say, the patient's zone. Not for any social contact, not for anyone coming into the room. Masks and tear stars should be used in general when assuming splashes. Yes, then they should be used in general. But as I already mentioned in the final version, the mask will be out of the concept. In case of shared bathrooms, a client with multi-drug-resistant organisms should use it as possible at last, and afterwards it should be cleaned right away, so that we put that in a footnote to the things. And as I already mentioned, visits to common rooms should be, obviously the patient should be instructed on good hand hygiene, the wounds should be covered, and as I said, it needs to be a decision of the treating physician and the infection control nurse for individual cases. There's something on the guideline, as you can see on slide 28, something on the guideline about what to do with visitors. We say, obviously, visitors are visitors. They should wash or disinfect their hands after contact with the patient / client in isolation who's carrier or infected with multi-drug-resistant organisms, and that's it. What we sometimes have, and that's a special thing in nursing homes, that some visitors participate in the care of a patient or client, and in that case, we decided that the same precautions should be taken than healthcare workers do. And that is true for any other person who is on whatever base working with clients, hands-on working in the nursing home. Whenever they work hands-on on a patient, they should take the same measures as the healthcare workers. We're coming more to the end of the talk and talk about contact tracing. We believe that if you do have an unexpected case of a multi-drug-resistant organism, or you suddenly find it, that you should have a look at the screen, the contact lines of a patient who wasn't known as a carrier. And we should do that for all the previous mentioned and listed MDROs, with the exception of ESBL. Unless you expect an outbreak, then it's a different situation, and you have lots of patients. But usually, ESBL, we already think it's too endemic to do that. There is obviously no need to include healthcare workers. I say obviously we all sometimes wish we would be able to do it or should do it, but since there is no means of decolonization, it's kind of not a futile thing to screen healthcare workers. And one of the major questions, and this is something where I will not be able to give you a good or a final answer, is when can we ever stop isolation of patients with multi-drug-resistant organisms? And we decide that once a patient has been identified as a carrier of an MDRO, it should say, highly resistant antimicrobial, it's not clear how many culture sets we have to take to reliably identify the loss of the carriage of the MDRO. So in some instances, we're still using that if you have two culture sets at least 24 hours apart and at least 48 hours after discontinuation of antibiotic therapy, that we would call some person like that as negative. This is to be very, very excluding CPE and VRE. And I know that many of you will start discussing now the literature where they have seen that even gram-negatives harboring ESBL are present and carried for in, for example, the carriers for months after they came back from the exposition in a foreign country. But I have to say that there's nice data from Platzinger recently published that show that, yes, people who came back after traveling still had ESBL 6 and more months afterwards, but when actually genotyping the isolate, they found out that it were different strains. So, yes, they still were carrying an ESBL harboring gram-negative, but it was a different type, and so not the same one. So, again, I believe that we have to reevaluate the data of carriership of multi-drug-resistant microorganisms, since that the fact that we start genotyping these will change it a lot. And we do decided to have something about being able to stop isolation in the nursing home setting, since these clients will be there for a very, very long time. And I know that this might be different from country to country. I know that in my country, the average admission time in a nursing home, and I find it rather amazing when I hear it, but we have a lot of nursing homes that do rehabilitation that kind of dilutes the numbers, but the average time of a nursing home patient being in a nursing home is only 73 days, but we all know that there's a different population too that's there for months, if not to say 4 years, and thereby we believe that we have to do something to say when you can stop isolation, because you cannot care for a patient lifelong in isolation. Excluded from that are CPE and VRE, and due to the other guideline, also MRSA, and that is actually my last slide. Of these content-wise, I wanted to show, saying that for MRSA, VRE, and carbapenem-producing Enterobacteriaceae, we say you have to have two sets 1 year apart, which is a logistical nightmare, by the way. But after the first negative set of cultures, we say we wait until the year in order to ensure that people are free from MRSA, VRE, or CPE. And only then the flag in your system goes off that this patient is free of it. So I do hope that this guideline that is completely new, as I say, and only just coming, will help us to change the outcome. And I found this street sign online about we watch out elderly people on their way to a cemetery, and I rather macabre, you could say, but I would do hope that the new guideline on controlling multi-drug resistant organisms will help to more make it the future than to the cemetery. And by that, I would like to conclude the content part of my talk on MDRO, and I really wish we had some system to get interactive, but with the last slides, I just would like to remind people about the 5th of May in 2014, the role of hand hygiene to combat antimicrobial resistance, and the URL, the link to the website, is given below. But now it's really interlinking hand hygiene and better hand hygiene to combat drug resistance, and every facility can register. And again, the link is given. And I do hope that many of you will be able to participate in this mostly certainly exciting activity of the WHO World Health Day. So the last slide, or the last two I have in front of me, actually just to remind all of you that this was the last WHO Taylor class scheduled for 2013. In 2014, and you have it on your slides, there are, again, exciting topics with real good speakers, far better than I am. And you can actually start out on January the 29th when Walter Singh from Geneva is talking about the results of a European multi-center study, Prohibit, which was, by the way, also presented in ICPIC this year. And this is really exciting and fantastic results. So I would advise you to listen not only to the one on January 29th, but to all. And last but not least, I would like to thank WHO, but also CRM and Virox to even make it possible that we had this teleclass. And I hope that you can take some of what the Dutch thought about MDRO and use it. If you have any comments, I hope that you find my email online. It's fosandreas@gmail.com. If you have questions or comments, I would be really eager to get them. Either do it via Paul Weber training or use the email I just mentioned at Gmail, fosandreas@gmail.com, and I would be looking forward to any kind of comment, and I would try to answer questions by email if that's possible. Once again, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Andreas, for giving us such an excellent presentation as usual. Now, because it is not possible for us to take any question, but if you have any queries and questions, then I think you can either email to Andreas directly, the email he has provided, or you can send it to Paul Weber at his email address, which is info@weberstraining.com. So at the end, on behalf of the WHO, I wish to thank especially Paul for doing such a hard work for organizing all these teleclass meetings for the last 3 years. And also for all of you who have joined us today in this presentation. As we all know, this is nearly end of 2013. So I wish all of you a very happy and a prosperous new year. And I do hope that you will join the new WHO teleclass which are on the slide. And I wish to thank you very much and goodbye, and hope to see you next year. Thank you very much.
Okay. Goodbye. Best wishes.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thanks.